Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Buffer Zones Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On June 26, 2014, the Supreme Court issued its decision in McCullen v. Coakley. This case involved the constitutionality of a Massachusetts law regarding speech within 35 feet of an abortion clinic. The law makes it a crime for speakers other than clinic employees to enter or remain on a public way or sidewalk within 35 feet of an entrance, exit, or driveway of an abortion clinic. The questions in this case are, first, whether the law violates the First and 14th Amendments on its face and as applied to petitioners, and second, whether, if Hill v. Colorado permits enforcement of this law, Hill should be limited or overruled. The Chief Justice delivered the opinion of the court, which held that the Massachusetts law violates the First and 14th Amendments. The court found that the law was content neutral, but not narrowly tailored to further the government's legitimate interests. It held that while Massachusetts has a legitimate interest in protecting public safety, patient access to health care, and unobstructed use of public sidewalks and streets, the law burdened more speech than necessary to achieve these interests. Justices Ginsburg, Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan joined the opinion of the court. Justice Scalia filed an opinion concurring in the judgment, which Justices Kennedy and Thomas joined. Justice Alito filed a separate opinion concurring in the judgment. The decision of the Fifth Circuit was reversed. To discuss the case, we have Mr. Eric S. Jaffe from the Law Office of Eric S. Jaffe, PC, and Professor Richard W. Garnett IV, Professor of Law and Concurrent Professor of Political Science, and the founding director of the Program on Church, State, and Society at the University of Notre Dame Law School. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Jaffe.
So in McCullen v. Coakley, the court was addressing a challenge to a Massachusetts law that restricted certain activities within a relatively broad swath of space in front of or adjacent to the entrance or the driveway of an abortion clinics, basically. It's defined in a particular way, but it boils down to abortion clinics. What was interesting about the case, I think, is twofold. One, it was a very large area that the Massachusetts law prevented people from basically congregating in. In some instances, reaching across the street, and hence had a significant effect on the way people could approach and express their views about abortion, particularly to people seeking an abortion. The particular case was a woman and others who sought abortion counseling and basically saying, "Oh, honey, I have an alternative for you. Let me tell you about it." So the court, in reviewing this, first decides that this is not a content-based restriction. It doesn't apply to what you say, but simply where you can stand and where you can be vis-a-vis an abortion clinic. And the court, in this instance, it was Chief Justice Roberts, joined by the four more liberal justices who rendered the majority opinion, at least, decided that this was a content-neutral rule because it was not justified by reference to what the particular speech was, but was instead being justified by general access concerns, access to the clinic, and basically traffic and safety concerns, so not to crowd the sidewalk and create obstructions in general. So the majority ultimately says, we think it's content-neutral, we analyze it under intermediate scrutiny, but all that being said, and we assume your interests are compelling, but all that being said, you haven't shown that less restrictive alternatives are inadequate. There are laws against actually obstructing a clinic. There are traffic laws against obstructing traffic. There are laws against harassing or intimidating people, and all of those laws are sufficient, and while they might not be as easily enforceable as a blanket rule just kicking people out from in front of a clinic entirely, that there's still a less restrictive alternative vis-a-vis speech, and consequently, the Massachusetts law has to be struck down. an incredibly narrow ruling, in large part providing blueprints for how narrower laws might be applied. And I think that's why you see Roberts pulling on the four more liberal justices who in some instances might be more skeptical of this, because it basically gives them the blueprint and gives abortion clinics the blueprint and states the blueprint on how to do this in a way that is more likely to survive. Four justices dissented, joined, concurred in the judgment, but expressed views that the non-content-based holding of the majority opinion was incorrect, that this was in fact content-based and should have been struck down on strict scrutiny. The main opinion on that was by Justice Scalia, joined by Kennedy and Thomas. Alito files another concurring opinion in the judgment, making a similar point. And what is interesting about that clash, I think, is that it's sort of different views of what's going on here. So I don't think it's a stretch to say that what was happening was that the state did not want women seeking abortions to be intimidated by folks saying, oh, abortion's terrible, abortion's murder, don't have an abortion. And that it really was primarily about the reaction that these women would have and the deterrence effect of that reaction. But they can't say that because that makes it content-based. So they instead come up with these other sort of pseudo-concerns of it's blocking access in general, not because you don't like what they're saying, but just because they're in your way, and it's blocking traffic. And by shifting over to those neutral-sounding interests, what ended up happening is the state turns out to have had very little evidence that those interests were really at stake and had very little evidence that they had considered alternatives to meet those interests. And what the dissent, I think, effectively points out, though I don't think that was their purpose, was that these interests are somewhat of a straw man or straw men, and we should really look at what's going on here, which is they've singled out abortion clinics because they don't like anti-abortion speech because it scares off the women. So that's just an interesting thing to think about in there, about this coming out the way it did because the interests advanced were somewhat constrained by existing constitutional precedent and thus had to be a little bit fake. And because they were fake, they didn't stand up very well. I will turn it over, I believe it's to Rick at this point.
Yeah, thanks, Erica. I don't have much to add to that, but just a few observations. So one thing I should say by way of disclosure, I guess, is that I participated in a amicus brief that argued that this was the correct result, but that Hill versus Colorado had been wrongly decided and should be overturned, and I think it was wrongly decided and should have been overturned. And there actually was, as we described in the brief, a fairly bipartisan consensus among a lot of free speech experts that Hill was just really hard to justify, that this idea that regulations of speech around abortion clinics are somehow content neutral seemed hard to square, not only with precedent, but certainly with sort of civil libertarian commitments of the kind that we see running through a lot of our free speech discourse. I mean, you know, there's a lot of people where if you tell them, look, a ban on burning your draft card is content neutral, they wouldn't buy it for a second. We know why you ban burning draft cards, government man. Or some might say, look, we know why the government tries to limit sleeping in the park. It's not just because of a content neutral reason. It's because they want to target a certain side of the debate about homelessness. What seems like something like that was and is going on here. But as Eric describes, the court frames this in such a way that the regulation is regarded as content neutral and therefore it's on a different track in terms of analysis. Now, even on that track, it loses, and I think it's good news for the freedom of speech that it loses 9-0, but I do think this was a missed opportunity to correct what I regard anyway as the mistake in Hill versus Colorado. A second general thing that might just be worth pointing out and maybe thinking a little about is the argument between Justice Scalia on the one hand and Justice Roberts on the other about what to do with this case, that is Hill. It echoes some of the other ones we've seen on the Roberts Court, where you'll have cases where there's a precedent that's being debated, whose validity is called into question. It might be Flast versus Cohen with respect to standing, right? Or we saw just a little while ago in that Michigan affirmative action case that there was a real disagreement about how to think about some older cases having to do with political participation rights and so on. What divides these justices, it seems, is a willingness to identify cases that are problematic as having been wrongly decided and to overrule them. We saw that in the public employee union case that was decided today as well. Abood is identified as a problematic case, but not overruled. And this is simply one of the things that I think scholars and commentators will talk and think about a lot in the years to come when it comes to the Roberts Court is not so much not only the disagreements that the court had about outcomes, but the what appears to be this different orientation toward precedents that are regarded as problematic. One side seems to have an instinct that if the case is wrong, perhaps it ought to be overruled. Some other justices seem to have an instinct that you can maybe minimize the damage of or cabin the implications of or perhaps just rework a precedent without actually overruling it. And so again, something to look for, something to talk about going forward.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.